Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at Revive. I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Integrated Marketing. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Des. It's good to see you and hear you.
I know, it's been a while since we've been on the same show. Good to be back. But we have a guest joining us today, Ryan Coliani, Chief Communications Officer at Revive, leading all of our communications and issues crisis work and ensuring that our clients are prepared for the unexpected, as well as elevating their reputations. Hi, Ryan. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, hey. Great to be here. Looking forward to chatting all things value attack.
Yes, yes, yes. We'll be discussing on today's episode, defending your hospital's reputation, which of course, Ryan's an expert in all of that good stuff, and the value in the growing storm of health systems value attack. Knowing that there's a number of things that's been swirling around, I know there's going to be a couple of headlines we're going to share here too. But if you could, Ryan, just kind of set the stage of what's going on. Tell us, you know, how we got to talking about the value attack.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fascinating thing that we've latched on to and really seen shift over the last couple of years. But essentially, kind of the value attack idea is that hospitals receive the bulk of the criticism for things about the cost of care in United States healthcare. No discussion about benefit to communities. Nothing about the value that we add as far as the care settings or even outside the care settings. It's all focused on cost, dollars and cents, nothing about the impact we served. And frankly, this probably shouldn't be overly surprising. When you look at things like 2022 midterm data with what, you know, looking at exit polls, the first issue that people were concerned about after the economy was healthcare costs. That's number two. So there's a reason why this is why people think this is a winning argument, whether you're a policymaker or somebody in another part of the ecosystem. It's working. And we really started to identify this back in 2018. You know, you saw things like surprise billing legislation start to gain some steam. You saw price transparency regulations start to come through. And so we saw that jump in scrutiny on overall things like cost of care. That went on for a couple of years, then pandemic happened and it stopped, but didn't stop for very long. So the appreciation that we saw during the pandemic lasted, I would argue, 6 months or so. By the end of 2020, it was all back to you're too expensive and you're greedy. And so if the challenges we saw before the pandemic were significant, right now we're kind of just in what we're calling a tsunami of conversation. It's everything. It's every single day we're seeing different studies put out there, different media outlets covering this, the overall challenges that health systems are facing from a financial perspective is not being added in as far as context about why some of these things are happening. But the overall narrative is that all we're doing is putting profits first. That's all we care about. We don't care about the well-being of people. We don't care about our ability to staff. You see these massive bills across the country on staffing ratios for nurses. It doesn't identify the actual root of the problem, which is the ability to recruit and retain. And there's a shortage from that part, but it's all focused on you're too greedy. You don't want to pay us enough, or you don't want to pay enough nurses to actually have staffing ratios. So it's really something that has happened over the last 5 years. But I would say for our clients, over the last 12 to 18 months, we're starting to see the traction. You know, we operate in a pretty risk averse environment. Hospitals are pretty reluctant to put their face out there and even to be broadly talking about the great things that they do, or push back on unfair narratives. Now it's an imperative. This is something that has to happen. Every single hospital system in the country needs to be doing this. Because if we're not articulating the impact that we have and the value that we have across the communities that we serve, we're going to continue to face this challenge. And it's going to be a lot easier for some of these non-traditional entrants that are entering the space whether that's Dollar General or Best Buy or Amazon or Walmart or Optum, make it a lot easier for consumers to go there. Because if they don't feel like we have their best interest at heart, they're going to find another alternative to get their care.
Ryan, I think that last point is so interesting. I'm looking at some of the survey data that came from a Revived survey in December 2022. Surveyed 1,200 plus Americans to track perceptions and trust in healthcare. And there's a lot there. We can dig into some of that. But one of those pieces that I think is really interesting to your last point about new entrants is that because of a perceived, you know, rising cost, consumers are likely to delay care or go to other settings. So 36% say that they're willing to, that they would delay care or look for another health system, or 30% would go to urgent or retail-based care. So this is not, this is a reputational issue. This is a new, this is an earned media issue, but it's also a compounding, it's compounding the financial issues that health systems already have. And it's adding to the funnel leakage. Is that something that you're seeing or having conversations with clients about that they're talking about as well?
Oh yeah. I mean, the reputation ability, and I was talking about this on a call earlier today, you know, the reputational challenge that our hospital clients are facing is essentially a attack on their ability to operate. Like if we don't have the trust of our employees, we can't recruit. If we don't have the trust of policymakers, we're not going to get legislation that's going to pay us fairly or provide us with the support that we need to operate in communities. It's more likely for a patient to go elsewhere. I think that same study that you're talking about found that 32% of consumers saw that profits were the number one attribute that health systems cared the most about. And I think the similar survey said that they felt that for every 12 cents on the dollar, that went straight to profits for hospitals, health systems, in an environment where we have negative operating margin. So there's just a misunderstanding of the economic environment. Healthcare finance is hard to talk about. It's not easy for the general consumer to understand. It's not easy for us to understand. It's an incredibly challenging topic. But we've just done very little to talk about the great work that we do as hospitals and health systems in the communities that we serve. And as a result, you know, payers are attacking us in contract negotiations and feeding a lot of these studies that are happening that are all focused on the negative side of tax exempt status and what that means and those types of things. Like it's a constant feed. It's every single week there's something new out there.
And almost when you're looking at that, I don't know, I guess you can call it the triangle of healthcare, because you've got the payers and government and legislation policy, as well as the providers and the hospitals and health systems, the most visible one is the hospital, the health system. And so as a consumer, you know, you're not thinking about all of the, but like, well, actually it's tied to, and that the providers are the ones that, you know, renegotiate the rates and how it gets paid and all this stuff. You're just seeing, I went to this doctor, they're now surprise billing me. There's all these extra things that, you know, weren't discussed, you know? And so it's okay. We're the ones that are visible, but how can we actually get out there in front and own that narrative that other people that aren't as visible are starting and have been, not even starting, have been owning. So it's time for us to step up to be able to own that.
Yeah. It's a really good point. Because as you point out, when you go and receive care, the bill, even though if you owe money, it's because your deductibles, your insurance company is not coming, it didn't cover it. You're not getting a bill from United Healthcare or Anthem or Blue Cross. You're getting it from, you know, Ascension. You're getting it from your care provider where you receive that care. And so for the consumer, that's a pretty, you know, they don't know the difference. They may not even know that the doctor that they saw within that facility isn't even an employed doctor at that facility. That's just a, you know, they just rent the space from the facility. And so as a result, we own everything around cost because our logo is at the top of the bill. And that presents a really, really hard thing to break through from and to explain to somebody. You're not going to be able to explain that in, you know, 20 seconds to somebody who asks a question about it. Wait, why? Wait, if your insurance company didn't cover it and they're actually the ones that want the money, why do I have to pay you? Like it's those types of things where you have to try to explain to folks.
Yes, I have a fun side story. I'll keep it short, but I have a friend who got a sleep study recently because he has sleep apnea and has been having issues for a long time. And so his doctor recommended a sleep study. He had the sleep study. Then he got a bill for like $4,000. and was like, what in the world? Well, insurance didn't pay. So we called his insurance. And of course, they popped him right back to the health system and said, oh, your doctor didn't mark this as medically necessary. So since that one teeny tiny conversation with insurance, all of the discussions have had to be with the hospital to go back and change the notes, to call the finance department every single 30 days so that they don't send it to collection, to call and constantly check up on it. Well, behind the scenes, who's actually the one that's not paying the bill? It's insurance. But his conversations and his frustrations are with the hospital because he has to call them every 30 days, if not more, to see how it's going. So for whatever reason, these the payers have set up the process so they don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Right? They're hands off.
And they ought to, and you saw, you guys might have seen this. There was a report a couple of weeks ago that Cigna denies a claim like every 1.4 seconds. And they do it all. They use AI and stuff like that to figure it out. It's the business model. We do a lot of work, and we keep trying to talk to health systems about doing this. If they could be more consumer friendly as far as appealing denials and helping patients through that process and creating some sort of, in addition to the billing departments that exist across every single hospital that exists in this country, is there a way for us to create a more seamless opportunity for patients to appeal their denials? Because almost 25% of all claims in the United States are denied by an insurance company. 0.1% of those denials ever get appealed. But when they do get appealed, almost 40% are overturned. So it is essentially the business model of some of these large payers to deny care because they know that the consumer is not going to know how to navigate the process. But for some reason, the value, the criticism again falls onto us because we're the name on the bill. To your example, Stephanie, we're the ones that they have to talk to in order to try to find a resolution. If we could make it easier for consumers to navigate that environment, what a reputational lift that could have happen for a health system.
1,000%. And this is a little anecdote, but I'll keep us going on this train. There was a smaller organization that I was working for, and it was actually the benefits. I think we outsourced. We didn't really have internal human resources. But they came to us and said, like, if you're going to do anything, if you need any procedure checkup, check with us first to make sure that you are able to get all of your I's dotted and T's crossed and all of that good stuff. But to your point, Ryan, knowing that this stuff is just going to kind of happen, it's almost like the provider then also, beyond giving you care, also maybe even gives you advice up front and helps you along the way of like, hey, we're going to need to do this. So then maybe you talk to your insurance about this up front to make sure that it's covered and that, we can work with, coding or anything like that. So it's almost like you need to have that relationship. You need to have a person, you got to have a guy at your insurance, the payer to get connected to making sure that it's almost like, what is the way in there? But I agree, there could be a huge reputational lift if there's a way for knowing that this issue exists for providers to help provide guidance on this as well for their patients.
Right. I mean, think about the administrative burden that is on hospitals and health systems to go through that process. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword too, because if we were going to provide more resources to allow us to help patients navigate a bill, that's more cost that comes on to us that ultimately needs to be passed on to somebody else. So if you think about it, like, the payers are actually the ones that have created that need. And as a result, the administrative burden is so much significant. You see studies all the time that talk about the amount of paperwork that administrative offices in a single physician practice have to navigate. I mean, it's multiple full-time employees that have to do it just to get insurance handled. It's maddening.
Yes, it's extremely expensive to handle all those calls, not to mention the angry calls and all, all the, to your point, paperwork. And that, I imagine, but Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, is not necessarily being paid for by the payers, right? Like the cost of business to work with them. It's hard enough to get a surgery covered for. How are we handling all this bloat because of the way the system is set up? Yeah. So it's just, it's wild. It's mind blowing to think about. And it's frustrating to think about, especially when we see, as we just saw, United Healthcare continues to have record profits. Payers continue to come out with record profits. And those stories are not, they don't get all the same attention that the negative stories do against the health systems.
So to that point, I know we shared one of our thoughts around a potential solution of help the reputation of the providers. But what else can we, what else can hospitals, health systems do to survive this storm?
Yeah, it's a tough environment given how long this is happening. This isn't something that you turn around overnight. And it's not something that you start in a, you know, you start a program and you start a communication strategy and you expect to see results, you know, immediately. This is going to take years for us to combat and push back on. So I think the first thing we have to do to that point is we have to be proactive. We really have to be smart with our strategy and talking about things, pushing back when the narrative is misinformed or sometimes inaccurate or even wrong, and also prepare for what those criticisms might be. You know, we did a lot of work a couple of years ago with health systems that were worried about the price transparency rules. And we knew that there were going to be specific markets where a Modern Healthcare or a Wall Street Journal or even a local media outlet were going to dive in and say, knee procedure at hospital X is $5,000. Knee procedure at hospital Y is $2,500. Why? Like this, you're too expensive, blah, blah, blah. Those are the types of things that we could be preparing for criticism on CEO compensation. There's a lot of that going on these days. It was Paul Keckley, his entire email out this morning was focused on that. You know, we can be focusing on those types of things. We can be focusing on looking at our charitable status and charitable care that we provide compared to our tax exempt status. That's not an accurate portrayal of what value we add to the communities that we serve. It is cherry picking data to compare straight charitable care versus straight what we would have been paying if we were a for-profit entity. It does not include things like the dollars that we lose on Medicaid or Medicare from a government payer perspective, which is significant for hospital operators. It doesn't include community programs where we're doing wellness clinics at churches and those types of things. And so we need to be ready to be armed with that data and those specifics before somebody calls asking a question. If we're not ready, the story, you know, it's going to take time to compile that data. The story may be misinformed and may not include our perspective. So I think that's one. You know, the second is we have to speak with one voice and speak as a partner in our community, not just as, you know, corporate health system. We need to show real faces. There's data across the industry that we've seen for years that the most trusted voices in hospitals or in healthcare are doctors and nurses. Health systems aren't too far behind. Those are in the 70s and 80s usually, most trusted voices. Even after the pandemic, they've dropped a little bit, but they've still stayed at a pretty decent clip. Hospitals are third. About a 2x level below that are payers or pharma. So if we have real people with real voices out there showing the impact that we have, that's critical. Third, we got to be prepared for the increased scrutiny of our costs. It's pretty clear that the payer strategy right now is where, you know, they're done giving rate increases. So what does that mean for us? How do we define what needs to happen in order for us to be sustainable? Why is the current financial environment a long-term risk for the health and well-being of the communities that we serve? If we don't get that turned around quickly, where are we going to lose access? Where are we going to lose jobs? Like those types of things. We need to be prepared to talk about that increased scrutiny because it's not going away. It's a winning message for policymakers. It's a winning message for detractors in our industry. And then lastly, again, it goes back to kind of the first piece on being proactive. We have to flip the script and stop being so cautious or think that our deeds kind of speak for themselves. We need to be proactively telling those stories. So developing that value narrative, what does it take to keep an emergency department open 24/7? What does it take to invest in a new service line? What does it take to maintain access in a rural community? All of those things are things that we can talk about being proactive about the value that we add in our communities, jobs, outcomes, new care offerings, those types of things, partnerships with different communities across the area. So many health systems do work in areas that people traditionally don't think of as healthcare. You'll see them working in affordable housing. You'll see health systems working on climate change. Like these are big, big societal challenges that our clients are focused on every single day. That people don't think about when they think about a hospital. And we need to start to change that. So I think those are probably the four big things that systems can be doing to move it forward. And frankly, you got to start now. Like if this is something that is important to you, because it's important to every hospital system I've talked to over the last couple of years, you need to start that process and to articulate that, because the longer you wait, the more of this kind of chipping at your reputation is going to continue.
It's almost like, you know, you can no longer be humble, right? or it might feel like, oh, I'm just, you know, patting ourselves on the back, or like chest beating about all the things that we're doing, but it's not, because if general public has no idea. I mean, we talk to health systems all day long, and we're hearing about the various things that they do. And to a degree, there's a lot of them that feel like, oh, we're not doing enough. But then when we ask them, well, like, what are you doing? There is this great list of long list of items and things that they're doing. It's like, let's talk about that. Because like, oh, well, you know, the world knows. I'm like, they don't. We are only paying attention to what's in front of us. We're not always thinking about like, oh, well, like, obviously, it's almost like even with your job, right? You have to advocate for yourself in order to get that promotion. Like, yes, ideally, you would want to see your boss, your manager see you and like, you know, raise you up, but they have so many different things on their plate. There's so many different folks that they're thinking about. And the average consumer is the same, where they're not always thinking top of mind of all the good. So let's remind them, let's show them, let's demonstrate that.
Yeah, maybe a couple examples. I'm thinking of the storytelling side of things. Brian, you were talking about how do we show and tell the stories of everything it takes to run a hospital. That's actually a fascinating story to tell. So, you know, it's been catching a lot of press on Netflix lately, but like the series Emergency NYC is such an incredible series. There's actually a couple of them that are kind of docuseries showing the behind the scenes reality of a hospital. Okay, so maybe a health system doesn't have the budgets for a docuseries. No problem. How do you use your existing social media channels to do that? Most health systems, in my humble opinion, waste that opportunity and post pictures of shiny, happy, smiling people, as we've been saying lately, Des, right? It's like, here's Nurse Michelle, and you know, she's so happy to be here. But that's space, that's mind space, that's media space to tell those really gripping stories. And there's so many more and other opportunities and ways to do it. And I think it's a truly compelling story to tell. It's interesting because other industries dedicate a lot of time and effort and resources to sharing publicly the stories in their corporate and social responsibility programs, their CSR programs. That's what we do as a business. We do CSR as a business. We save people's lives as a business. We make people, you know, healthier and live longer. But yet we're not telling those stories in a gripping and interesting way.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point. It goes back to what Des says on being overly humble. I mean, all of those things are things that could be done. These stories exist. Like you can mine a health system's website and find a good number of them. But unfortunately, a lot of times they're just buried. They don't come to the forefront. They're hard to find. It's great content that just doesn't get seen. We were talking with another client today. It was like, where are your community benefit assessments? Those are documents that they are, you know, obligated to put forth by CMS that have great stories in there that we could go further for. So, you know, setting up a process internally with your communications and marketing team to have kind of listening posts across a health system to better understand where these stories exist. Because, you know, for corporate employees that aren't necessarily in the care setting every day, it's really hard to identify. So you've got to figure out the different people across your enterprise that you can talk to kind of find out where those stories are. And I think that's just a critical piece of infrastructure that communications and marketing leaders should be looking at to making sure that's happening internally.
Yeah. And, you know, Ryan, Stephanie, both of you had mentioned something that makes me think about like, it's that nitty gritty that people are more interested in. I was talking to a friend the other day about how often are we really going to the movies, for example, to see a movie that's about like shiny, happy people. There's no conflict. Everything like works out. Like how often are we watching those shows, those movies? Not at all, because like we thrive on conflict. I mean, look at the state of reality television. It's all about the sports. It's all about the conflict, right? And so I think we too often shy away from that in how we overcome these. I guess, there's, of course, there's television shows like House, right? Where it's like, oh, there's this impossible thing that we could have cured, and then we cured it at the end. But it's like, what is the version of that for telling the true authentic stories of what's happening in those walls of hospitals that really is more gripping than this, oh, this fluffy story, for example?
It's right. So real. Does, I mean, we could have a whole 30-minute sidebar on that alone. Because I think it is hard for many health system marketers specifically, but healthcare in general, because of course there's negatives. And of course the patient experience is not everybody lives, not everybody has a good outcome. It's really hard to balance to how to talk about the negatives. But to your point, Des, nobody leans in to a happy all the way through story. And so I think that the place where it can be done is, I go back to, you know, the early days of ER and Grey's Anatomy and whatever, right? Like, there's so much chaos happening behind the scenes at a health system that is for the betterment of the patient. And what does it actually take for physicians and nurses and receptionists and, you know, everybody, lab techs? I mean, imagine, for example, behind the scenes in a lab. That's fascinating. When was the last time you ever saw that story? I've never seen it told. And I think people really lean into those stories. And anyway, so preach does.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are the kind of the untold stories would be great, to your point, like the lab team, or it's a billing office that's helping a patient, being a patient advocate to like get a specialty drug approved by insurance so that their kid can get the treatment that they need to get better. Like, these are big, big problems we're solving every single day. And unless you're actually experiencing it, and actually seeing care being received by yourself or a loved one, you just see the big headlines about, hospital X just sued 5,000 patients because they couldn't pay their bill.
Yeah. And kind of going back to what we were talking a little bit earlier around trust, and that consumers trust individuals, not necessarily an institution. Also, on top of all of this and trying to navigate and figure this out, hospitals are, they're merging, or they're, having to figure that out, or acquiring other locations. Talked a little bit about some of the things that come up with even that, because that's also a part of reputation as well, that we're, really trying to take a stab at of owning that narrative, owning that conversation.
Yeah, no, it's a really important point. Especially as hospitals and health systems look to their future, because it's pretty cloudy right now. We're not sure what's going to look like. It's the new entrants we talked about earlier. It's health systems that are being forced to sell or close. And if we don't get that right, how are you going to have the trust of a new community that doesn't know anything about you if you're trying to enter that as part of an acquisition or having to walk away from a community? It's a really challenging environment, because it all goes back to dollars and cents. When people hear mergers and acquisitions, that's all they think about is that piece.
1,000%. All right. So, key takeaways from this conversation. It sounds like now is the time to act. Now is the time to say something, to tell your story. And like Ryan mentioned before, that yes, it will take a number of years, but because of that is why we absolutely have to act now. So it's a matter of taking these steps of, one, being proactive with the communication around connecting trust and value to what you bring to your community, not being anonymous, speaking as a member of the community, being visible out in the world, and not this not necessarily shadowy figure, but that there is a face that the consumers can put to the name, and that prepare for the increased scrutiny of cost, that's going to continue. So get in front of it. So you're going to develop a narrative, a value narrative that does keep that top of mind for the consumers, right? Anything else that we haven't already touched on, or any other like bright light bulbs that have just gone off in your heads during this conversation?
Well, the only thing I would add, and I'm sure Stephanie has thoughts, is that, for a lot of health systems, they hear this and they're like, I'm not sure where to start. Like, this seems like a lot of work of things to do. And yeah, there's certainly an investment that's required of time and resources to make sure that this happens, that you do it effectively. But I we're not going to necessarily partner with every single other hospital in the country to tell this story. But if more hospitals start telling this story, then collectively as an industry, we're going to be able to lift ourselves up from a reputation side. So again, start now. You can start small. You know, figure out what is that narrative? What do you want to be known for? What do you want to, what are the differentiators that, that counter some of the perceptions that are out there on this type of topic? Start there and then start telling those stories and looking to reach media and stakeholders through own content.
Yeah, to that, I'll add maybe a very specific step. And I'm coming at this from the storytelling angle because that's what I do most of the day. And we have a lot of these conversations with clients about what is your overarching storytelling calendar look like? What does your overarching editorial calendar look like? You already have people who are out there shooting videos. You already have people who are posting on social media. You already have, you know, hopefully an email newsletter going out, whatever. All of these things you're cranking out every single day. Most healthcare organizations in general don't have that aggregated in one place where they have an eagle eye view of it all. Imagine if you could take a look at that and go, let's not do more. Let's actually just focus in on what we're already doing. And let's cut the things that are filler. There's a lot of filler storytelling out there, right? How do you take that entire editorial lens and go, okay, over the next 3 months, we need to shift the narrative in our local market in XYZ ways. And so these are the five stories we're telling and everything's going to ladder to those. You can make a huge dent for zero extra dollars in my opinion and experience. And we're having these combos with clients every single day. And I know it's hard to wrap the arms around all of that, but it doesn't take any extra money.
Yeah. And we're happy to help guide you in that. So we will wrap up this show. I know that we can keep going on with all the ideas that are kind of spinning around in our heads. But Ryan, Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover or you want to talk more about this subject, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And make sure to share the show with your friends and colleagues, especially if this was a topic that was touching right with what you're dealing with right now. And then give us a review and rating on iTunes. All of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. And we'll see you next time. 3.